very much, Nick. So to activate them, it's very simple. Just slide the power button at the top and it will wake itself up. So good morning, everybody. It's a real pleasure to be here today to talk to you all about digital reading, e-books, and the reading market in general. I'm hoping today to kick off what looks to be a very interesting series of sessions by giving you an overview, basically to try and set the context for the rest of the presentations today as much as possible. So essentially I'm going to talk to you about Sony's involvement and our legacy in digital reading, a bit about the technology, a bit about the customer, who is actually buying our devices and using them, and then the future. Unfortunately, I can't be at the panel session later, so I'm going to try and leave about 10 minutes at the end for any questions if anybody wants to interrogate me when I've finished. So I'm going to kick off. Everybody is aware of Amazon. It's almost getting to the stage in the marketplace where everybody refers to digital reading devices as Kindles, in the same way that everyone refers to MP3 players as iPods. But that's not strictly true in terms of Amazon having a longer legacy as Sony in this industry. We actually began way back in 2004 with the catchily titled EBR 1000, also known as the Libre. We launched that as the first ever consumer-facing e-ink device, so that will be the first reader that was ever produced. It was launched in Japan only, and not to beat around the bush, it failed. The reason for that is because, well, the market wasn't ready for a dedicated reading device, and probably more crucially, there wasn't actually any content to go with it. So you see there, 2006, so 2 years later, we refocused, regrouped, and then went to market with a different strategy. So in the US, we launched the PRS500, and that came with a content proposition as well, so an ebook store. So no longer were we throwing a device into the market and saying, there's a reading device, go and use it. We're saying, there's a reading device, and there's the content to go with it. And then since then, we've followed up every year with a new range of devices. 2009 was a key year for us, and we went more global than we've ever been before. The next slide, I'll show you our European rollout and how that went from 2008 onwards. But you can also see a greater focus within Sony. We then created three product lines. The top line is US and Canada only. They're the wireless 3G devices. And then the devices below are the various ones that are going around this room at the moment. So into Europe, that's basically the footprint that we have at the moment, starting in 2008 in the UK and France, and then quickly following up with the Germanic regions. And then last year, our newest additions to the reader family at Sony were Spain and Italy. As I mentioned about 30 seconds ago, the key for us is not just launching a product into the marketplace. We also go to market with a content strategy, which is different in Europe compared to the US. So in the US, we have an ebook store, and in Europe, purely for expediency and getting to market quickly, we partner with leading existing ebook providers. So these are the ones that we partnered with when we launched. So you can see some big names there, Waterstones, Fnac, Thalia, people like that. So basically we're giving the user an end-to-end solution from the best hardware on the market right the way through to a relevant local content provider. It was mentioned in the introduction about the amount of devices that are out there. Wikipedia currently lists about 59 e-readers that are available. I'm more inclined to believe the 85 number that was mentioned in the introduction, if you include all the Chinese models and the Southeast Asian models that are coming out. The reason I say there's 59 devices in the market is because it gives you an idea of the competition that's out there and the potential confusion for the customer. Most consumer electronics have a normal product life cycle. So you start with early adoption and then gradually move to mass market, more companies move into the market, then you have price competition, consolidation, and then you move through to innovation and maybe eventually product disappears off the marketplace. What took 30 years for Walkman has seemed to have taken about 3 years for Reader. That's the speed at which this market is developing. So for Walkman to get to its stage now where it's a very mature market with MP3s and it's not much growth, that took 30 years. So we're now at a stage with Reader where we're still in the growth section, so we're in the mass market bit now. But the time it's taken us to get there has been incredible. Okay, so a little bit about the technology for the devices that are going around the room at the moment. I do have an embedded video here, which I'm not sure is going to work. No, it's not. So I'm just going to talk to you about it instead. So we have two devices on the market at the moment. Both are touchscreen. We have the Touch Edition, which is the larger screen device, and the Pocket Edition, which is, obviously, as the name suggests, a smaller screen device. which can fit in the pocket. Okay. They're both touchscreen, like I say. Our vice president has a little party trick that he likes to demonstrate. It's the only true touch device on the market at the moment for digital reading, purely digital reading. When he's showing potential clients and partners this device over dinner, he'll reach into the middle of the table, pull out a flower from the display in the middle of the table, and he'll show how he can turn the screen using the flower. It's a very sensitive touchscreen, and it's a very nice user experience. It's the closest thing you'll get to reading a book, we believe, because you're very tactile with the book, turning the pages, not fumbling around with lots of buttons. I'm going to skip through this as quickly as I can, because I appreciate you're not here for a Sony sales pitch, you're here for more information. But the screen being touch allows you to annotate it. There are styluses on plugged into the side of the device. You can actually write, you can annotate, you can even use your finger if you don't want to use a stylus. It has built-in dictionaries, it has translation capabilities there for English to four different European languages, and then back again. Expandable storage, so basically you can take your entire bookshelf in your pocket. It will store thousands of books, more than you can read in a lifetime. And the battery life, which leads me on to the next screen, which is about e-ink technology. It's real ink that you're looking at there. It's not pixels or some sort of electronic jiggery-pokery. It's actually real ink. And very briefly, it's created where you have an electrical current below the ink, which if you negatively charge it, it will rise. If you positively charge it, it drops. So if you've got pixels the width of a human hair, you can start creating letters by adjusting the charge appropriately beneath the pigment. By doing that, you're also extending battery life, because the device is only using battery power when it's creating the letters, so when you're putting that charge through. Once the words have been created and the images on the screen have been created, the battery turns off. That allows you to have a very long battery life. You can go on holiday with this device and leave your charger at home. It will comfortably run for 2 or 3 weeks with normal usage. The benefit of the screen technology itself, which most of the leading e-ink devices in the market at the moment use, is that it is like paper. You'll see it when the device is in front of you. You'll get no glare from any of the lights behind you, and you can use it on a beach in direct sunlight without any eye strain. I don't know about you guys, but if you sit there reading an LCD screen all day, it is very tiring on the eyes. I can't do it very easily when I'm reading a book, so the paper-like screen is just perfect for proper long-term reading. Very briefly into file formats, I want to introduce you to that, EPUB. I'm sure James McFarlane will talk to you about this a little bit more in his presentation later, but EPUB is basically the file format of choice at the moment in the marketplace. To sum it up, it is, you could call it the MP3 for ebooks. It's open source, it's controlled by a panel called the IDPF, and sitting on that panel are various representatives throughout the industry, including Sony. The benefit of EPUB is because it's open source, you can use EPUB on the Sony Reader, and you can use it on every other reading device except Apple's iPad and the Amazon Kindle. So essentially, if you buy something from Waterstones, you have freedom to use it on our device or any other device that supports EPUB. In a nutshell, EPUB is XML, so a very similar language that you'll see websites built in. And that allows a lot of flexibility. So when you're looking at a book on those devices, you can embed hyperlinks, you can text resize and text reflow. Now, this is a key one in terms of usability. What I mean by resizing and reflowing is obviously you can zoom in and make the text bigger. So you can see small on the left, right the way through to extra large on the right. The thing about resizing, though, it's not like resizing an image-based PDF where you simply just zoom and you lose half the page off the side of the screen and load a page off the top and have to scroll around. The device will and the XML will work together and it will reflow the text. So you can see on the screen there, rather than having to scroll off the page to complete your sentence, the sentence simply chops itself and goes to the next line and the next line. And that allows you a lot of flexibility to go from the smallest text right the way through to really big text for those with eyesight problems. Back to the file formats again. So embedding text hyperlinks and embedding metadata increasingly becoming more important as EPUB develops. At the moment, we're looking at a version of EPUB which is... that, put that in there to wake you all up. We're looking at a version of EPUB which is mainly built for linear reading, so novels, the sort of books you typically buy. Not necessarily at the moment education books, but I'll come on to that later. increasingly more importantly, as the EPUB format develops, we're going to want to put metadata in there and CSS styling so that you can embed things like complex tables, complex scientific formulas, that sort of thing, which don't necessarily render very well at the moment on the current generation of EPUB and e-ink screens. And putting things like metadata in there will start to allow a greater application for search and intelligent tagging of content within books. So you can not only link within a book, you can actually link wirelessly to other sources on the internet that can pull in relevant information related to what you're reading. Okay, so that is a little bit about the marketplace and the technology. I thought you might be interested to see a little bit about who is actually digitally reading. Now, for the purposes of this section, I'm purely talking about the devices that are going around now. So this is the dedicated e-ink devices for reading only. This research was done in the UK in 2010, so I don't have the stats for the devices that are going around at the moment, so this is a little bit old, but there's no reason to believe that it's changed massively over the last year. So, like I say, these are the two devices from last year, the touch and pocket devices in the previous range. Now, weirdly, for a consumer electronics product from a company like Sony, this is a profile that we just don't see anywhere else in Sony. It's an older age group than you'd expect. It's more skewed towards female than you'd expect. Yes, I know it's only 43%, it's less than male, but that's quite high for a piece of consumer electronics at Sony, typically. And in terms of some demographics that summarise that, they have slightly higher disposable income than the average. They are slightly better educated than the average, and slightly older, like I say. So it's a very interesting set of demographics, which probably... it's more to do with society in general and the fact that this age group is more akin to reading books than the current generation that are coming through, more interested in playing games, Angry Birds on their iPhones, and so on. That's one of the challenges that I'll come on to later, how you get that generation reading books. But just going back to the fact that this particular segment that's buying Reader is on average more educated than the rest of our consumer electronics portfolio, it does highlight a real opportunity for education publishers here. If you can start providing the relevant content to them when they're in university and college at school, getting them reading books on a device like this, there is huge potential to sell education-based content. So that's the consumer who was actually buying the Reader. But where are they actually using it? This is probably the worst competition you'll ever enter because there's no prize. But does anybody actually want to have a guess where the number one location is for using a Reader? I'm hearing on a train, I'm hearing travelling.
In bed.
It's actually at home, yes. Thank you. So 85% of people use it at home, which really surprises a little bit. Obviously, people read books at home as well, but we really thought that this would tap into the travel market more than the at-home market. We were wrong. 62% use it on plane travel, and 53% use it in hotels. So that then does speak to the travel sector. For the 85% of people using it at home was interesting to us because that helps form the technology that you provide in the device. So 3G devices are all well and good. We don't have one in Europe, and we took the decision not to launch a 3G device in Europe, partly because of this, partly because of commercial reasons and so on. But if you're at home, you don't necessarily need a 3G connection to read a book. You're close to your computer and you can download and buy from there.
Can I just ask about the stats? Do you have any stats that kind of give the primary use of reading? Because obviously, you think like 62% of people might have bought it because they're traveling on a plane to like home, so they use it at home. Is there any like statistic that shows kind of what is their first, second, or third like primary use of where they are?
I could probably dig it out, I don't have it to hand, but the primary use overall is at home. But yeah, good question, I don't have the stats to hand. Okay, so we've seen who buys the Reader, and we've seen where they use the Reader, and now a few stats on how much they're using their Reader, and trying to give you an idea of the shift from paper books through to digital. So, books read per month. These people are heavy readers, which you'd expect. You wouldn't buy a reading device unless you were a heavy reader, I suppose. But you can see there that a quarter of the people buying these books are reading five or more e-books a month. potential there for publishers is obvious, really. You've got a very big installed base. We've got millions of users across Europe, as have Kindle and some of our other competitors. There are a lot of people buying a lot of e-books. How many books do they store on their reading devices? Well, you can see there that 76% have more than 10 on their device at any one time. That obviously speaks to this statistic here. If you're reading 5 books per month, then it stands to reason that you have a lot on your device. Something like the Reader, with its expandable storage, is perfect for that because you'll never run out of space. And if you do, you simply swap out your SD card and put another one in. Quite what those people with 200 plus books are doing with their time, I don't know. They're probably spending their time just reading and doing little else by the looks of things. And this last stat, it tries to show you the migration from paper to digital. You can see it's a fairly even spread from people at this end of the spectrum. Remember, these are Reader owners, so we asked the Reader owner, how much time do you spend reading on all on paper versus all on digital? And you can see the shift is starting to happen. It's fairly even on both, so you've got 22% that still read most of their content on paper, but equally you've got 22% that have now shifted purely to digital. And then somewhere in between you've got the rest of the people evenly spread. But it's undeniable that the shift is happening and it's going that way towards digital. Right, so I'm just going to finish off my presentation with a look at the future. So far I've talked purely about e-ink devices and dedicated digital reading devices. I'm going to leave time for questions at the end, but one of the questions I always get asked at things like this, and I'm going to address it head on here, is there really a future for e-ink devices and for Reader? Given that the Android revolution is happening, Sony themselves are launching the S1 and S2 tablets later this year, and there are already countless tablets out there. Is there really a need? Is there really a space in the market for something like that? Well, we believe there is. The statistics that we've just been through show that Reader owners are different from the rest of the marketplace. And it's a sizable market. It may be an older generation, but they will continue to exist and they will continue to read. What these devices do is they now open up an opportunity for publishers, for device manufacturers, for authors, everybody along the value chain, to start tapping into as yet untapped marketplace, which is the younger generation, as touched upon earlier. If we can start getting people onto tablets as well, we can start getting the same content through and get people reading that don't currently read, the Angry Birds generation. And remember, reading enthusiasts are different. This particular slide here was a bit of independent research done in the US back in December last year. It looks at a range of devices. The devices they looked at were the iPad, BeBook, Barnes & Noble's Nook, the Amazon Kindle, and the Sony Reader. So, 5 devices. And they looked at these devices purely from a reading perspective. So, iPad, obviously, lots more than a dedicated reading device, but we're looking at it purely from reading. And they wanted to measure device owners' emotional attachment and passion to the product and the service that they use. And it came up with some very interesting statistics that were plotted on this. They measured love and hate and like and dislike, and then plotted onto the scales how much internet chatter that they generated on web blogs, on forums, all that sort of stuff. Results are interesting. So you can see here that iPad, the massive red dot in the middle, generated the most internet chatter because it's got the biggest dot. But you'll also see that it's right in the middle. It's kind of ambivalent. People don't really love that device for reading on. Remember, I say again, this is just reading. Take out emails and internet surfing and stuff. This is just reading. So people aren't that bothered about reading on iPad at the moment. So if we now look at the dedicated reading devices, the BeBook, the Nook, Kindle, and the Sony Reader, you can see there that, okay, there's not that much internet chatter generated compared to the iPad. You'd expect that. But the quality of that chatter is high, and especially with the Sony Reader users. They love their device, and they love the service, and they're more likely to talk to their friends about it. They're more likely to talk about it with their friends and their colleagues and get people interested in reading. So there will be a market for a dedicated reading device going forward, based on the demographics that we've seen and based on the research that we've done. So I want to conclude the PowerPoint section of my presentation with a few challenges and concluding thoughts that face the industry. So all the way from device manufacturers like Sony, right the way through to publishers, authors, and everybody else. reiterate the point I made a couple of slides ago. We're not just e-ink now. E-ink will continue. Unipurpose reading devices will continue. We cannot ignore that. But there is a massive opportunity. Tablets, smartphones, laptops, everything along those that spectrum of devices is a potential outlet for reading. Technology will also move on, screen technology especially. We're starting now to see the first consumer-facing hybrid screens coming out. In my opinion, they're not good enough yet for the mass market, but they're screens that you can combine digital reading and LCD, so you can toggle between the two depending on what you're doing. The technology will move on and it will get better, and that sort of thing will open up huge potential for lots of different file formats. And that leads me on to point two. It's not just novels anymore, which is what it's predominantly been for the last 4 or 5 years. Content is key. These devices may be pretty, but without e-books, they're kind of pointless. So moving forwards, we'll start going into new sectors. And for me, education is one of the biggest untapped markets that's available at the moment. And as file formats move on, technology moves on, we can start doing more intelligent meta tagging and linking within content. It'll really open up an opportunity there. There's also children's books, which are high colour, often interactive. They don't work very well at the moment on e-ink screens. They're not engaging enough for children. As technology moves on, they will become so. And travel as well. That is another potential where you can tie in location-based services, internet access, and content, e-books as well. Link those three together, you've got a very compelling proposition. Okay, so number three, enhanced reading experience. Again, linked to what I've just mentioned there about the linking together different bits of technology. Enhanced reading experience, it's going to be moved beyond linear reading, so no longer will you start at page one, move to page X. You will have, imagine a Stieg Larsson book comes out, and you start reading it on your dedicated reading device, you get off the bus, it's synced with your mobile phone, you plug in your headphones, it turns into an e-book where you left off. You get back home, or you get to work on your laptop, you can actually access your service through the cloud, you can get back into your book where you're on. There's enhanced content there. Maybe there's some clips from the movies, there's interviews with the actors that are there, there's even an author biography or whatever. Enhanced reading will develop the market considerably away from the people that just like to linear read, and it will bring in the younger generation with more compelling content potentially. Won't just be a la carte ebook purchasing, so buying a book off a shelf, paying for it, buying another one, paying for it. I think it's going to be slow, but it needs to happen. The business models have to change, I think, from the publisher's perspective and from the ebook store perspective, away from just selling straight books and maybe having more innovative approaches, so subscription models, something along those lines. And clever use of DRM, maybe, to allow a certain amount of sharing of your books. I know that's a sore point for education publishers, especially because sharing of ebooks in a university environment would perhaps really harm their revenue streams. But if we can introduce some kind of clever DRM use there, you can move beyond ebook purchasing and really open up new revenue streams. If we don't, then the looming spectre of piracy is always there. It's arguably not as big as the music industry faces in terms of a challenge, and the rate at which piracy will develop will probably be a bit slower simply because there aren't that many people out there willing to chop the spine off their book, scan it, and then turn it into an e-book and distribute it on the internet. But it's not a problem that we can ignore, and it's also not a problem we have a solution for yet. We need to work together to find one. Again, linking to education and libraries, an awful lot of debate going on at the moment in terms of physical libraries and their role in society at the moment. The debate has been raging for quite some time. Libraries could and should play a part in the digital era. Exactly what that looks like at the moment is to be confirmed. These Sony Reader devices will support the library service at the moment powered by OverDrive. So if you register with your local library, you can access their websites, go through their digital catalogue, download books for free, as you would do going into a normal library and taking it off the shelf, transfer it to your reader, and you'll have it for however long the library's loaned it for. And at the end of your loan, it will disappear off your device. That's the sort of thing we need to start developing even more, I think, in conjunction with publishers and the end consumer. But whatever happens, Sony as a consumer electronics company and also an IP company, we have a film studio, we have a record label, so we understand the value of content. So we're on the side of the publishers and the authors as well. But whatever happens, we want to be at the heart of the debates, of the technology advancements, and helping to drive digital reading industry forward. that is the end of my PowerPoint section, so hopefully I've left time for some questions, if anybody has any.
Okay, thanks very much. Yes, we have got some time for some questions. Who would like to begin? The lady with her hand up there.
You talked about when you initially launched back in 2004, that the markets and the continents weren't ready. But it seems to me that there's also the issue of the technology. Then presumably the screen resolution wasn't very good then because the EA wasn't working. So do you think it's more the market, the technology, or the content availability?
To be honest, it's both. I would say the screen technology would probably have been slightly less at the time because we were appealing purely to an early adopter market at that stage because nobody knew about digital paper at all. So I guess the early adopters by definition buy stuff knowing that it's going to be slightly flawed, not working perfectly. But yeah, it would have been the content, I think, that the lack of content that would have really harmed. I mean, it was launched in Japan, and as a society they just hoover up manga content and comics and stuff. Had it gone to market with a proposition around that, then maybe it could have actually succeeded. We have since gone back to Japan and launched again with the newer devices and with the content proposition, and it has been a completely polar opposite to what happened in 2004. So I think content would have been the key driver there.
Yes, just another question.
Steve, thanks for your presentation. My name is Chris Holbert, University of Amsterdam. I'm actually a lawyer. I was interested about what you said about the libraries of the publishers and them having to work together in order to let the market grow. In the Netherlands, we see that it's increasingly difficult to convince publishers to allow libraries to lend books as they, well, as you said, do here. Do you see the similar tension in the UK as a relative outsider? Or, I mean, the difficulty, of course, is in the business model that publishers can also offer ebooks for downloads, etc., etc.
Yeah, a very good question. And you're right there, as an outsider, we don't directly deal with the sort of licensing conversations that the publisher will be having with the library and stuff like that. But yes, there is a certain amount of concern, I guess, from the publisher's perspective about going too far towards the library direction, because understandably they will be taking away a revenue stream. Spoke to one publisher recently who said the barrier to getting a library book out at the moment, a physical library book, is quite significant. You actually get up off your chair, you walk out, we're getting your car down to the library, look for it on the shelf, take it off, get it, blah, blah, blah. With a digital version, it's so much simpler. And at the moment, I think some publishers have a concern that that will be the default that people will go to first off. So I want this book, I'll try my library first, rather than I want this book, can I be bothered to go to the library, shall I order it online and have it delivered? So there is a lot of work to be done. I'm sure there are solutions, I don't have one at the moment, but yes, there is a certain reticence to move forward as quickly as perhaps consumers might like.
One more question. Yes, I should say, if you can say your name, please, and where you're from, it would be helpful. At the very back.
Yeah, my name is Kaveh from River Valley. We hear a lot about this, the fact that it's just like paper. But I don't want paper, because if I'm reading in bed, I like the fact that it's got a backlight. So you don't have to have another light to look at it.
Well then, honestly speaking, I would say you're not a target market for a dedicated reading device. the reason I say that is because we are trying to get as close to the paper book as we possibly can. And if you're reading a paper book at night in bed, you kind of need a light on because there's no backlight from paper either. Like I say, screen technology will move on, and those hybrid screens I mentioned will start coming in where you can toggle the backlight on and off. And at risk of going into a bit of a Sony sales pitch, but any of you with readers can have a fabulous range of accessories, including one particular cover. There's actually one going around the room somewhere, which you can pull out a little light, and it shines onto the screen, and there is your light. So, yeah, I understand your point that you like backlight, but this product is aimed at being paper rather than a tablet.
Okay, I think we should move on. Do you want to take one more?
I'm happy to.
Okay,
just this time.
Yeah, sorry. You mentioned education. one, it's deeper because it's very linear from what you showed me.
Yes.
The education is quoted textbooks tend to be in the mountain, and a significant challenge is to take any square page there.
A couple of very good questions. So first of all, the screen size one. Kindle tried the DX with the larger A4 size screen. That didn't work. It's not really a format in terms of e-ink that consumers have readily accepted. I would say in that particular scenario, you would have, if you buy an e-book, say, hypothetically speaking, you buy a textbook from Waterstones, you can transfer it to your reader and read it there. You would also have the rights when you bought it to read it on your laptop too. So if there were particular pages or a particular sort of content that you needed to see on a large screen, you would have the freedom to do that, albeit on a computer on a backlit screen. The first part of your question is about file formats. Yes, absolutely. Very, very valid point in terms of current format doesn't support textbook use, which isn't linear reading. It's flipping between sections. It's going to the index, looking something up, going back again. Often complex formulas and tables and stuff, which EPUB version 2, which we have at the moment, doesn't support very well. Version 3 is on the way. The exact scope of what version 3 will look like is still being nutted out in the IDPF, and Sony is a part of that. Version 3 is built with education in mind and with richer multimedia experience in mind as well, so the ability to embed videos too, which might be useful in an education context. So today, can't do it. Next version, the plan is for EPUB version 3 to support. They will, yes.
One more question. Front here.
It's Trevor. I don't know if this really should go to you yourself or it's a more broad question, but we use a number of platforms, which is all content control. We use Dawson, Coop, Zebri, for our students to access e-books, mainly in PDF formats and mainly on computers, primarily. But really, for this to work for us, we don't want to have a library full of Kindles, we don't want to have a library full of Sony readers. What we do want to do is the content to be made available from perhaps, you know, accessed as from Dawson, Coops, whatever, to be made available to their own devices. If someone comes in, I've got this Sony reader, I've got a Kindle, but I want your e-books that you've got up there on this device. I don't really want to use my laptop, blah, blah, blah. I want it on an Android platform, on my mobile phone. So we've got to try and make it accessible to everyone, and it seems to me that a lot of the readers are very specific and are tied into particular publishers, etc., etc.
Yes and no. Today you'll struggle to get Kindle involved in something like that simply because they are proprietary and they lock off their file formats and their DRM. You can only use Kindle on Kindle. If you were to use something like EPUB, you would obviously have to develop your own platforms and delivery mechanism to support that, and your DRM would have to be carefully worked too. But if you were to build a platform that can deliver DRMs, EPUBs, you would be able to use it on an Android app, on a Sony reader, on a B-book, on anything that supports EPUB.
All right, Chris.
Chris, back to the point you said you can only use Kindle on a Kindle. I have a lot of stuff on my iPad.
True, yes, through the apps.
So that multi-platform ability is there, just as it's been in the walk up?
Yes, that's true. Fair point.
Okay. Let's move on. It's almost 10:45. Steve, thank you very much for that presentation. Steve's here until the break,
I believe,
so you can get in at 11:30. Thank you very much.